school's out for summer. Today marks the last day of school for many districts, including the Lansing School District. As students clean out their lockers and say goodbye to friends, many will be looking forward to summer camps and family vacations. But for some kids, particularly those who are low income, enriching summer activities aren't always accessible. And that can have a huge impact on their academics come fall because of something called the summer slide. That's the term used to describe the learning losses kids experience over the summer. Here to talk more about the impacts of summer learning loss and how to combat it is Mary Sutton, Executive Director of the Michigan After School Partnership. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you.
And also joining us, Lori Van Egren, Assistant Provost for University Community Partnerships at MSU, who has studied the impact federally funded out-of-school programs have had on Michigan kids. Welcome, Lori.
Good morning.
What does research tell us about how much learning kids could lose over an average summer?
Well, meta-analyses, which take a lot of studies, smaller studies, and combine them into one to get a better idea, have suggested that there's about a month of learning loss over the summer. So what we want to do is try to avoid that because kids are going to be behind a bit when they come back into school.
Mary, which kids exactly are most impacted by summer learning loss?
Well, probably low-income kids have the most dramatic effect, although all kids lose some learning during the summer just because of lack of practice and not being exposed to the same types of activities that they have during the school year. So all kids are impacted one way or the other. Math scores, particularly for both low-income, middle-income, and high-income students, see a slide of somewhat. But the greatest impact is in reading scores for low-income students.
Is it largely about money and income and summer enrichment programs, or are there other challenges?
It's probably what I like to call an opportunity gap, is that higher-income students have the opportunity to experience greater, high-quality, enriching activities. They tend to take vacations, visit museums and libraries with their families, whereas low-income kids don't have the opportunity to have the same types of experiences over the months that they're out of school.
Lori, you study the impact of one specific out-of-school initiative called the 21st Century Community Learning Centers. Tell us about what the initiative is and what kind of programming it funds.
Well, this is a federally funded initiative that is then awarded to states who have grant competitions within their states. It's been going in its current iteration for about 10 years, and it specifically focuses on low-income students in low-performing schools. And it's designed to provide exactly the kinds of opportunities that Mary's talking about for kids who wouldn't have those kinds of opportunities otherwise. So it runs after school, and it also runs during the summer.
Does Michigan get a lot of this money then?
So there are usually anywhere from 250 to 350 schools in Michigan at any point that are operating these kinds of programs. And so what they do is they're comprehensive, and they're meant to be in addition to the school day. So they usually have an academic component, but they also have other kinds of opportunities for kids to learn around youth development, recreational activities, leadership skills, things like that.
Lori Van Egren is Assistant Provost for University Community Partnerships at MSU. We're talking about the impact summer and out-of-school programming can have on summer learning loss for low-income kids. We're also joined by Mary Sutton, Executive Director of the Michigan After School Partnership. This initiative has been around in Michigan for over 10 years now. What's been the impact of the programs on these kids who participate?
Well, what we find is that, in general, students who attend more and have more opportunity to have academic experiences in the program are doing better in terms of grade change over the year, state testing, their teacher evaluations, things like that. But in 2011, we had the opportunity to specifically study the summer program. So usually it's hard to disentangle what happens during the school day from the effects of what happens after school, right? Because they're getting school all day long.
Gotcha.
During the summer, when we looked at it, what we found was, what we would hope is that the students don't decline, that they don't have summer learning loss. And what we found was that 75% of the students at least stayed the same or improved, and we actually found that a third of the students actually improved in their reading and math.
Mary, what does a really quality summer program look like?
A high-quality summer program really takes a look at the youth development needs of students during that time period. It doesn't look like school. It provides enriching activities for kids to build on the skills that they've learned during the school year. It's fun. It's engaging.
It mixes the academic, like Lori talked about. It mixes the academic
hands-on, very exploratory, project-based learning. Kids are really have an opportunity to explore the things that they're interested in and engaged in.
Lori, does the funding for summer and after-school programs for low-income kids match the need?
Oh, no. It's very underfunded. And Mary actually could probably speak better to the numbers on that.
Yeah. Right now, the only funding really that's dedicated to after-school and summer programs is federal funding, and Michigan gets about $38 million. That funding only serves to fund about 20% of the most highly qualified applicants for the program, and I will tell you that very few programs will actually apply for funding because of the high competition. So even though we don't get as many applicants as we could just because of that reason, we still can only fund about 20% of them.
Does the year-round school trend impact? I mean, I would imagine that would have an impact on this landscape.
Yeah, Lori probably has a better answer for this.
It would seem there would be less of a summer slide districts.
Depending on, if we're talking balanced calendar, a lot of times what we're talking about is still having the same amount of days that children are in school, just spreading them over the course of the year. Mm-hmm. So the amount of time that they're out of school still has an impact. And they'll still have the same amount of days where they're not in engaging activities and having opportunities. So it doesn't solve the problem. It might lessen it and move the issue around a little bit.
Go a little bit deeper with us, if you can, on the academic component and, for lack of a better word, the less academic component involved in a good summer learning program. What does that look like?
Well, a good program would probably have academic things that may be bolstering what happens during the school year so that there's not loss, but most of it would be project-based. So, for example, we have projects that are up in rural areas in the north, and they will do a lot around environment and science, going out and looking at water quality, and really helping kids put into practice the academic things that they're learning during the school day and school year. And then in addition to it, it might have youth development and leadership, but health and nutrition, but programs are a high-quality program will also embed academics into those things. So you're learning measurement and counting and proportions if you're doing something like health and nutrition and cooking.
Sounds like STEM learning a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's been a big emphasis over the last few years.
Back to the funding gap here, though. Where are opportunities for more funding? Does much happen on the local level?
I would say that probably most funding that happens on a local level will be supported by your United Way organizations, community foundations, some specific support maybe from businesses as it relates to STEM activities and those kinds of opportunities for kids at the local level.
How do the kids attach to these kinds of programs, though? I mean, is there a resistance to get involved here, or do you see buy-in on the part of the kids who are participating? It's a broad, general question. I realize that it must vary from student to student, but
it does. But we do surveys with all the students who are at least fourth grade and up, and this is a K-12 program, and most of them are very happy to come. They're attached to their programs. You find a little drop-off in middle school and high school when they are having more choice about that. But the programs work very hard to be engaging and to address what the kids want to do in their programs as well.
Can you say that the summer activities here, when they're done well, might get a young person more excited about returning to school in the fall?
Absolutely. One of the greatest outcomes of a high-quality after-school program is increased engagement and attendance in school. So I think they call that the ABCs, that there's better behavior, there's better attention to coursework, and there's better attendance. We like to say in the business that kids vote with their feet. So if kids are not engaged and they don't want to be there, unless they're in the very low elementary ages where it may be used in part for childcare, a resource for the parents, they do vote with their feet.
Very interesting. We want to thank our guests, Mary Sutton, Executive Director of the Michigan After School Partnership. We've also been joined by Lori Van Egren, Assistant Provost for University Community Partnerships here at Michigan State. And we've been talking about the impacts of summer learning loss on low-income kids and what can be done about that. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.